for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Live and direct from my subterranean lair. My name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. Spiral Radio, baby, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me until we are all vibrating the same frequency. I want to welcome everybody tonight. We have another great show lined up. Anybody in the chat room, I want to thank you for joining. We have a very interesting guest, and I'm very happy to have him here. And it's about 3 or 2 in the morning where he's at, so it's a real pleasure that he stayed up to really come and share his knowledge with us and his research. Everybody, I want to welcome Frank Jacob to Spiral Radio. His website, if you want to look him up real quick, is packingformarsmovie.com. He's a writer, he's a director, he's a producer. He's known for his work on the 2011 Ultimate Rush, Solar Revolution he made in 2012, I believe, and then recently Packing for Mars about a year or two ago, and it's making waves, everybody, and we're going to talk about what put him on the path to make these films and the interesting encounters that he's had during making them, and, you know, it's really a pleasure to have him here, everybody, and I want to welcome to the Mystical Spiral Radio, Frank Jacob. Welcome, Frank.
How you doing, Ra? Thanks for having me.
It's really a pleasure. I want to thank you for, you know, contacting me and letting me know about your research, because it's really amazing, and I had heard of the movie beforehand, you know, and now, you know, looking into it, it's just it's amazing what you've done. And I'd really like you to just let everybody know, you know, how you even got on the path. Because, you know, no one just wakes up in the morning and decides to make films like this. You know, it's just, it's an interesting avenue to go down. And it's a risky avenue to go down as well.
Yes, absolutely. You're right. I just didn't, it wasn't one thing that just kind of came on its own. It took really... It developed over a series of years, and it started from a perspective of an artist, actually. And I think because I look at it more from an artistic, or originally looked at it from an artistic perspective, I allowed myself to take liberties that perhaps other people may not take with regard to filmmaking, with regard to this information. And it started off really with the book Alternative 3, which was the 70s cult classic out of England written by Leslie Watkins, which somebody had sort of told me about. They were really adamant and passionate about this book being a sci-fi book written as like really just as a truthful book written as science fiction. And I read it, and it really reads well, and it's a page turner, and it really does not come across like a sci-fi at all. It feels very real, and it sort of goes under your skin. But you know, many years went by before I actually thought. I never thought I'd make a film about it, and it wasn't until several years later I was looking for kind of a new project to sink my teeth into that was going to encompass many of the different facets of creativity which I'd been developing, you know, starting off with music, and then I worked into visuals. I did live visuals, and eventually I got into making films, short documentaries, longer documentaries, and then I was working at a network. And the day I wanted to make a larger project was sort of around the time that I was reopening myself back up to sort of the more wild side information out there. I mean, I'd grown up and had always been kind of a UFO believer, but I'd never really considered myself a researcher or somebody who had to do something about it. So when I saw this movement kind of emerging called the exopolitical movement, with, you know, people that were considered, you know, astronauts and radio operators, trusted, you know, citizens that our society puts in positions of responsibility because of their unwavering, you know, mental abilities and whatnot, talking about releasing information about, you know, the presence of, say, extraterrestrials or secret space programs. It intrigued me, and I thought, okay, that's a cool subject I'd like to do something with, but I didn't really have a focal point until one night late I heard an interview with the great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, Laura Eisenhower. And she was talking about being recruited for this Mars colony, and it just stopped me in my tracks. I'm like, wait a minute, like, is this really true? You know, as one of those aha moments where you're thinking, okay, it sort of came full circle. And for me at that moment, I thought, okay, that's sort of that's kind of something which I could make into a crazy storyline, because it was really all about, I'd like to know the journey of what it would be like to find out if this is really true. And so the idea came just kind of to put together a portable film kit and hit the road and meet up with whatever doors opened, whatever people I met that were going to lead me toward filling in the puzzle of this great big bizarre picture of Alternative 3, which is essentially, in a nutshell, the story of kind of an elite group building a survival colony on the surface of Mars. And so that's kind of how it started. Yeah, I guess that would be the first thing. And I got in touch with Laura. She wrote back, and for me, the message from the universe was, okay, if she gets back to you within 24 hours, then that's the signal that it's actually something you should go after. You know? You're waiting for these signals from the universe.
You make those little deals with the universe with yourself, like, okay, if this happens,
Absolutely. That was one of those deals. And I had no idea, of course, where it was all going to lead. And I really did believe that the perspective that I wanted to take was to really go down this thing in terms of, it's a cultural phenomenon, what's going on with, it's not just, you know, data and information and about proving and left brain logic stuff. A lot of it is just, there's this thing going on out there, disclosure or exopolitics, and there are these whistleblowers coming forward. And a lot of them don't have really much to show except, you know, the stories that they talk about, because they walked away from these projects with very little more than the shirt on their backs. Yeah. So it was really all about kind of going there. And I felt if I could sit across from these people, there's something different from hearing somebody tell their story on a radio program to actually going and sitting right directly across from these people, pointing a camera inches from their face, looking into their eyes and feeling how their story and their voice and their body language resonates with you to determine whether that has, you know, sort of a kind of an intuitive truthfulness to it that I felt that we could all feel with our inner radar.
Yeah, I agree. And, I'm going to ask you right then and there, like, once you got the chance to spend some time with these people, like you're saying, and you got to see them, I mean, did it come across to you at any point in time where you think that some of them were sent as misinformant people, you know, or agents, or some kind of you know, just to throw people off? Like, there is some kind of massive conspiracy to actually give misinformation as well?
Well, I believe that the people that we ended up including in the film, I don't really feel that from those people. I feel that that's going on in the scene in general. I did notice that there seems to be strange, you know, strangeness and anomalies and things going on in that whole area of research that leads me to believe that what you're talking about is very true, that there definitely are contaminants swimming around in the soup, and they're deliberately placed. And I think it's almost, you know, it would almost be ridiculous to think that there wouldn't be, because they pretty much exist in every other field in society, you know, whether it's something as crazy as disclosure and UFOs and ETs and breakaway civilizations and secret space programs. But on the one hand, there's like just bona fide scientists that are all trying to elbow their way to the top with their research, and they will falsify evidence, and they will, you know, make up things about their fellow scientists to make sure that they get pushed aside or not taken seriously. So I think this element of the human, condition is prevalent everywhere. So it's definitely prevalent in this scene.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. And, you know, I just feel that there is a massive shift going on our planet, and there's people awakening every single day. But at the same time, the amount of people that are still asleep, Frank, is massive. So I think that, you know, this is kind of what I believe, Frank. In a way, you know, I feel that we were created in this universe out of chaos, right? There was light and dark matter that collided, and then somehow we were born, right? So it's this battle between light and dark at the beginning of time, at the beginning of our creation, was this, you know, huge collision between light and dark. And now everything in our world is a reflection of that collision between light and dark. And I think it's also in our soul. Like, we go through that eternal battle always between the light and the dark. And I think when we lose that battle, it reflects into our physical plane. And I think that the elites in the know, that they know this battle that's going on between the light and the dark, and that they're totally trying to steer us away from understanding our consciousness and understanding our soul. And they keep us trapped in these prisons in our consciousness to keep us limited. And I really feel that there's been a war going on, not just for our consciousness, but for our DNA and for our true information of our origins and unlocking our DNA from the beginning of time. And this war maybe somehow ended up on Mars for thousands of years. And what we see now is the rubble of what once was. And, you know, and that some people in our government or NASA or all these, you know, in the know, they know truly what really happened, or have some of the pieces that they haven't given to us. And that's what we're starting to awaken to. And when we start to become awakened, it's like, it's almost like it fires these little fibers in our DNA that sparks, and the remembrance of our ancient past starts to become alive. And, you know, and we start to remember. And I think that this now, this shift of consciousness is our time of remembering. And that's what's happening to us. And, you know, I would really love to see what your opinion on that is, and if you've experienced some of the same things in the stones that you've overturned.
You know, I agree. I think there is a major shift going on, and I look at it as a line that you have to cross, and you have to make this decision and kind of an agreement with your higher self to say, you know, I'm going to cross this line that's going to take me away from all these things that society calls normality. You know, that means listening to what everybody in your education, all your teachers are telling you, which is basically regurgitation of the textbooks which they were told they had to teach you from. All the news media, which is essentially following the same narrative And, you know, I'm just along that subject alone. I mean, even the whole fake news thing, which has kind of hit the mainstream now, they're usually basically using that term to try and turn people that are bringing out truthful information away from people by calling things that they're talking about fake news. But it's interesting, you know, being over here in Bavaria, Germany, looking at the headlines, you know, I have that perspective that I've lived in the United States, I've lived in Canada, you know, I've lived basically in four countries and learned a couple of languages, and I've watched the culture and the mainstream and all those and studied them in those cultures and realized that more and more now that narrative is a global narrative. It's the same sort of information that's coming out everywhere, which is being, you know, trying to keep people focused on something very mundane, keep them away from asking questions. It's too dangerous. And it has to do with something called cognitive dissonance, which is, you know, if people are locked into a system and a circle of friends and family, and it's all based around a certain belief system, when something comes along that that tells them or shows them clearly that there's major flaws in this belief system, and shows them something which is truthful, which contradicts a lot of that belief system, the majority of people will cling to their old belief system before they make that change. And so what's happening right now is a lot of people in the world are making a decision to cross over that line. Now, it's still, exactly as you said, really a minority of people doing that. If you look at if you walk out on the boulevard and overhear the average conversation of people on the street and you're awakened, you know, it's almost depressing because you realize people are still stuck in these really mundane and superficial dialogues with each other. And it's kind of disconcerting and scary. But we have to realize that it's never really ever taken the majority of people to make a change in the world. It's always only been a very small amount of people that have made these changes. You know, the 100th monkey theory is true. Yes. It's like, well, eventually there's going to be a critical mass, and this is going to be a dam breaking, and this information is going to come pouring forward. You know, we have J.J. Hertog talking in our film. He's a very interesting character as well, very multifaceted, deep connections with JPL from very early days, but also like a paleoarchaeologist and an astro archaeologist, and he talks a lot about this sort of breaking of the dam of information where things are going to start coming out that are not going to be stoppable. And prior to Packing for Mars, we did another film, Tanya Maidenford and I, called Solar Revolution. And in this film, we basically worked together with a German biophysicist called Dieter Brewers, and we worked on his whole research is about how electromagnetic fields are affecting human consciousness, specifically related to the sun. So it was a very fascinating journey talking to, you know, physicists and biophysicists and a whole like cross disciplinary group of scientists that were basically showing us the same thing, that what's going on right now, coming from the center of our galaxy that's affecting our sun and it's affecting us on Earth, has to do with the stimulation of DNA. And it seems almost inevitable that very, very, that very, very soon there's going to be this sort of a breaking of a threshold, and a lot more people are going to begin to see things and feel things that is going to open them up a lot. And some of them will be confused about it, but those of us who are awake, or those people who are striving to wake up, they'll be helped by this energy. And the people that are kind of still stuck in their, you know, in their cognitive dissonance world, they will be shocked, and they will have the hardest time sort of assimilating this information.
Yeah, I agree, Frank, and I feel like that 2016, we felt this whole shift building and coming in, like this dimensional shift. And I feel that everybody that's been doing their spiritual work during this shift and awakening to their consciousness and to their spiritual evolution, if you want to say, that they will start to succeed in 2017 and things will start to really happen for them. But at the same time, those who have not been doing their work to start to spiritually evolve and awaken, if you want to say, then I feel like they will be getting left behind in the dust, so to say.
Yeah, you know, I almost look at it as I used to make this analogy that we're all sort of in this, we're all standing around Central Station, and there's all these trains lined up, you know, and we're all, that's like all the people in the world, and some of us are all on these different trains, and the trains are parallel on the tracks beside each other. But once the trains leave the tracks, yeah, those people who are on, you know, the train that you might see next to you will begin, the tracks begin splitting apart, and eventually it's like when you make decisions to move away from a certain way of thinking, you know, the people in that train, that timeline, let's say, begin to fade into the distance, and things that, you know, you used to have around you all the time, suddenly you notice they're not there anymore. They've just disappeared and they've vanished, and you've sort of embarked on another direction altogether. And I think we're splitting off into a lot of different timelines, and some of us are going to move forward and take great leaps forward in not just in consciousness, but there's technology out there which is suppressed from us. There's things that we could have had in our society which would have changed everything from the foundation upward, including transportation, you know, including electricity, including communications and space travel, all these things that are being utilized by those elitists that you referred to earlier, you know, which we call the breakaway civilization in our film. Those informations need to be shared with the masses, because essentially there would be no need to have these crises in our world. We wouldn't be having this terrorist scene going on right now, because essentially there would be no need to be provoking a war in a certain area of the world to maintain this hegemony, you know, this Western feeling like we must dominate, we must control, because otherwise, you know, things are going to be miserable, because everybody would have access to free energy. Everybody would have access to limitless potential, and they wouldn't be warring with each other. Our focus would be different all on its own. It's not something you have to teach people to do. It's something which is, I think, in the human nature, because essentially wherever you go in the world, people want to be happy. They want to have families. They want to have friends. They want to have peace and prosperity, not war and, you know, chaos. I mean, that's just not, I don't believe that's our natural state. I believe that was perhaps inherited from a group of warring individuals or mindset that was going back into the ancient days. And definitely there are signs of it, especially on the surface of Mars. You know, the Fermi paradox, you know, something people bring up a lot when we talk, that, you know, if you're familiar with it, it's just the idea that if there was really life abundant everywhere, if you do the math, the amount of life-sustaining planets in the universe would be, there'd be millions and millions of them. So where are they, you know? But the fact is, we don't necessarily need to look so far. They're right next door. And our NASA and JPL friends basically don't believe that we're ready to understand that. But the ruins are there. The artifacts are there. We talk about them in our film. And since we've released the film, we've been approached by people that have shown us even more things that just confirm that has indeed happened, that there's been this, you know, ebb and flow of like rise and falls of civilization based on war and destruction. And this pattern, I think, needs to come to an end. And I think it is coming to an end. I would like to think anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, what's your opinion? Because for me, looking at pictures of Mars, I mean, we're almost looking at like, we're looking at the American Southwest, and it almost looks like there's debris. Some kind of debris everywhere, or, you know, that's thousands and thousands of years old, that's just clutter of something that once was. I mean, do you think is this just rock formations, or does it really look like some kind of past civilization debris?
You know, in the beginning, when we were embarking on this whole project, Packing for Mars, there was a lot of photographic material being analyzed, and the forensics are being done, and the regions that they were roving around on the surface of Mars, and in general, I felt a lot of the stuff may look like things, but my gut feeling told me that a lot of it was just really pareidolia, that we were really just seeing, you know, faces in the clouds, and in this case, in the rocks. However,
yeah, I'm not just talking about Sedona.
Exactly. What's happened now is that they've dropped Curiosity in an area called Galaxias Chaos. And it's now, I mean, there's like there's a Facebook group that people should check out, you know, called Exclusive Mars Images. And the people that are on that site dropping their research onto the pictures and everything are dropping things in that you just cannot, you can no longer say that those are just rocks. I mean, they are definitely, like you say, these things are evidence of just shards of a civilization. There are ruins, there are buildings, there are metal parts, and there are like artifacts and sculptures and things on. You can't. There's just too many. There's far too many of them to be just written off as pure, you know, fantasy. And it's really interesting to watch this sort of going on right now, because there's essentially no comment. I mean, they've got all these geologists, you know, studying Mars, you know, roaming around for years and spending billions of dollars, you know, telling us, oh, yeah, we're still looking for that missing bacteria to tell us that, yeah, you know. And then finally, after 30 years, they admit that there's water that they've known about. And now it's, of course, just, well, you know, that there's that, but we're not sure if that's enough to say that there's, I mean, they're just, it's unbelievable. They're telling us that they're doing search for extraterrestrial intelligence, but they've got no SETI people on the crew and no archaeologists on the crew commenting on the foot. The rover's just casually roving around and taking snapshots of these amazing things, and they're just ignoring them. You know, it is ridiculous, and people should be outraged by it. You know, for me, that's a whole part of my own awakening process, and this was really the original part, is I was outraged. Like, when I saw Jose Escamilla's films, you know, Moon Rising, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but it's just, you know, it's all about the moon and what's going on the moon. So, yeah. I mean, that was sort of the kickoff back. The first things they were looking at were artifacts that they had found and things smudged out on the moon. And he does an incredible job just documenting, at the very least, that there's smudging going on, that there's erasing going on, that they're cropping out things, that they're deleting certain aspects of the pictures, and they're replacing things. There is like a fine art going on somewhere in some department, and we now know that, of course, because after we when we won the People's Choice Award at the UFO Congress last year, we met with Dr. Ken Johnson, who was actually an astronaut involved in the whole NASA missions, developing the technology, and eventually, in the course of his career, he came into possession of the photographic archives of what was up there, and he was stunned, because in the pictures that he had, they were different, and we were finding images that he had that were the same images that Jose had, but they were the undoctored ones, and it was clearly evident from the pictures that there are dome structures, that there are cities, that there are artifacts on the surface of the moon that we are not being told about.
Yeah, and I agree, you know, and I come from an old lineage of Strega from Italy, which are shamans or witches, and our lore about the moon is that it's some kind of astral base as a way station between realms. And
you know, it could be. Some people even think that it may be hollow. You know, when they did some experiments and they collided, it
rang like a bell, right? Yeah,
it rang like a bell for 20 hours,
like a gong. Yeah. And I think that even Wernher von Braun, after it did that, they sent it back a second time to ring, you know, to drop a bigger item down, and it rang for like an hour,
you know.
And you know, so we have like a 2 minutes to break. You know, in those 2 minutes, I was wondering if you have ever heard of like Ingo Swann and remote viewers who have looked at the moon and looked at other Mars and other planets like that, and if maybe you had one of these either psychics or remote viewers on, you know, your film, you know, like just at on the set, you know, maybe adding things, and I would like to hear about that. Yeah,
sure. Well, I'm fully familiar with Ingo Swann's account, especially of his account of what happened to him when he was told to go remote view a part of the moon without his knowing originally.
Yeah,
shock. And his total shock to discover that there was actually a being there which turned around and looked at him, and it shot him right back into his skin because he was so, you know, terrified when he saw it. But we actually have a remote viewer in the film who, you know, was working closely together, you know, with Duncan O'Finian, because Duncan O'Finian was a so-called super soldier. He was one of those people that they put into these programs that they used mind control and they developed, you know, certain aspects and certain capabilities in these super soldiers, and they were always teamed up and paired up with a partner. In the case of Duncan, it was with Miranda Kelly, who was essentially out there remote viewing and scanning areas all around him to make sure he's safe. And in the case of the story that Duncan tells us with respect to Mars, it's really quite fascinating because Duncan had a memory and found himself remembering times where he was actually piloting ships, freighters, to the surface of Mars and back. And in one of those cases, he basically had there was an accident and he almost lost his life. And he didn't, in this case, have Miranda with him, but they called Miranda in basically as a last-ditch effort to see if they could sort of save him. And she recounts the story of what happened when she did that. And it's just it's really heavy. I mean, I think it freaks a lot of people out, especially if, you know, people aren't really familiar with this information and they're watching this film and they're like hearing somebody talk about how, well, yeah, they followed his cord and they found him out there in the ethers lost and they guided him back. It sounds like absolutely, you know, it sounds like wacko, you know, woo-woo information.
Sci-fi mumbo jumbo.
Totally, yeah, but they don't realize.
We'll pick it up right where we left off, Frank. We're going to go on break real quick. And there's that. Now that we overturned that little stone right there, I got so many more questions now. they're coming up. So we'll pick it up right from break. Everybody, we're here with Frank Jacob. And you can find him at packingformarsmovie.com. And, of course, my name is Ra, and I'm at themysticalspiral.com. Song coming up is called Jail Card by Analog Driver. And you can find us at Reverb Nation or Spotify. Spiral out.
My disguise to you, I've seen them happy as control. Just
anywhere. Thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
And we are back. My name is Ra from the mysticalspiral.com, and we are with the one and only Frank Jacob from packingformarsmovie.com. And I guess we'll pick it up right where we get off, because 30 minutes is going to go by so fast. And, you know, Frank, when we were talking just now, like, so many more things were coming to me. And, you know, it's hard to really, you know, really weed out what's legit and what's not legit, you know, in the world. And, you know, when someone is just doing research from strictly reading other people's research and books and information that way, I feel it's just one aspect of the situation. But when you have like a psychic or remote viewer, which I feel we all are, and it has to do with just unlocking our DNA, like we say, and we all have these abilities. And you know, Spiral Radio here, and just my life in general, is also about like musical healing and the, you know, the aphrodisiac, basically, it is for the soul, you know, music. And music is probably a real big part of your, you know, experience with your movies as well. And I feel like, you know, just having a person like a remote viewer or a site. See, we're remote viewing too, Frank. I feel like it's almost like, you know, everybody that remote viewing thinks it's like the end-all, be-all of the psychic experience almost. But I really feel like it's more like the military's version of being a psychic. You're like on a need-to-know basis. You know, it's a controlled situation where you're on a directed mission. And I really feel like that it's not as you know, amazing as everybody's saying. It's more like you're being controlled like a psychic, and they're weaponizing you in a way. And but I feel also that at that same time, that having that experience with your movie is just an amazing aspect, because people that are pulling in stuff from the holographic universe can add such an interesting aspect to what's really going on. And I would really like to hear more about what you've learned, you know, during this process.
Yeah, I think it's the stream of consciousness part of it is critical. And even in remote viewing, a lot of people will, I mean, like you say, there's the weaponized version, which I think has been developed by the military, and people like Ingo Swann are sort of a big part of that. But it is true, it is all of us inherently that have this ability to sense things, because we're all tuned into this giant magnetosphere of the Earth. And we learned in some of our research, Tanya and I, we were working on like I was telling you about solar revolution, we were working with and interviewing scientists that were telling us basically this magnetosphere is real, it exists, and it can store and hold all the information, all the thoughts that resonated from every single mind that's ever been on the planet. And it's like a giant repository cloud of information which we can all tap into. So it's all there all the time. And so the secrets that are being kept, you know, by this barrier of secrecy from the government or from the elite groups out there, this will work for a period of time when most of us are not checking that we can actually get our information directly and not having to wait for it to be shown in black and white. And they're relying a lot of us not tuning into these abilities of ours. But essentially, you know, when a person makes a decision to venture into an area and do research, in the case of us, you know, making these films and the latest film, Packing for Mars, it was just really an example of how things will open up to you. I mean, it started off with me having this idea to kind of make an arty, cool film that explored, you know, a lot of the films that are into sort of this whole paranormal or like UFO stuff tend to be kind of dry talking head films. And coming from the background of the arts, for me, it was important to try and raise the information into a more of an artistic flow. And so that's how it all started. But when I opened myself up to it, you know, it took a few days. And through serendipity, through the universe unlocking the first set of doors, I ran into Tanya Maidenford in Screen Addiction, the producer of Screen Addiction. And she was also on a sort of, she still is and always has been kind of on this quest for unlocking truth and exploring this through media. And it just shows that, you know, I mean, we never would have met if I never would have said, I'm just going to go out and do this and know that the universe will open the doors for a fool wishing to know a secret. And then there, you know, a few days into the journey, I collide with her and the two of us take up like a, you know, a modern day Mulder and Scully, path, and the, you know, when we're out there in the field, you know, running into people, it's just amazing that you begin to resonate, and this resonance, like, you know, you hold two glasses beside each other, one of them was vibrating, and you put the other one up beside it, and the other one pretty soon starts to vibrate as well.
Yep, it's like a spider web. Yep,
right, yep. And this is kind of what happens: is you just go out there and you find out that the information's all been there all along, and it's just you were not tuning it in. It was like having a radio in front of you, but not knowing that you could tune the dials and hear voices and information coming out of it and music coming out of it, because you were just fixed on the static channel forever, and you had no idea that the thing could actually bring out other frequencies.
Yeah, and I truly feel that this Gaia is, you know, and each planet like Mars and Gaia and is it truly its own God and its own consciousness, if you want to say. And I really feel, Frank, that we're, everything is encoded, all in stone and bone. Everything, you know, in stone and bone is all encoded with this genetic memory of our past. And I feel like that for sure, 100%, I feel that, you know, we're not just inheriting like our dad's cheeks or smile or our mom's nose. We're inheriting our trauma and accomplishments of our ancestors and our family and genetic line as well. And, you know, before we get too off subject, I really wanted to, because first of all, let me ask you, Frank, can we have you back on so I don't have to try to cram all these questions in the last 20 minutes?
Yes.
That would be great.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Cool. So we could definitely book you again afterwards or, you know, yeah. Because definitely I want to, you know, because there's only like 15 minutes left and I have so many avenues I want to go back. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to have to just cram it all in. But, you know, going back to Duncan O'Finnegan and, you know, and we'll touch on the music thing as well. But, you know, and these remote viewers, I'm really interested if he ever mentioned a past war on Mars and if there is some sort of breakaway civilization there now.
He actually did. You know, we got into a lot of conversations. Not all of it made it into the film because we found, you know, evidence of these past civilizations through some of the other protagonists that are in the film. So, you know, rather than having everybody say the same thing, we just chose, you know, certain people just to sort of collectively represent an idea. But he, you know, he and I and Tanya often had conversations, and he would talk about these esoteric visions and things that he was having of these battles going on. And he himself seems to be this part of a lineage of these warriors. And if you know, we have him in the film, you know, kind of in an artistic way. We filmed them when we did the interview with him. He was giving a workshop on self defense, and at times he was using sort of movements like he was a sword fighter, and we filmed some of the stuff. So it's just amazing to watch the body movements and how that sort of locked into his DNA. But you know, the fact is that there's been some solid evidence presented about how the surface of Mars and even on Earth, you know, you can go to areas of the Earth where there's scorched Earth, where the ground is covered by almost like a silicon kind of material, like it was just cooked with radiation, and it just, you know, blasted the surface. And the same thing has been found on the surface of Mars.
Are they isotopes? Is that isotopes or something like that?
It's part of it. The isotope that was found was this, you know, xenon-129, which is elevated and shows that it was an artificially created isotope, which is not found. It's funny, if you look at the radioactive signature of all the planets in our solar system, they're all the same. ironically, but there's one that's not, and that's Mars. And that one has a particular elevation and this one isotope, and this is not a naturally occurring isotope. And this radiation spectrum is very specific to one thing, and that is man-made, you know, refined nuclear materials. And it shows that essentially the two areas on the planet that this is all, like, there's major concentrations of this element on are areas right, like, above the Cydonia and the Galaxia Chaos area, which indicates that those areas either had some external force come in from someplace else that said, all right, you guys are done. We're done with you guys, you know. We're going to wipe you out. Or, you know, it's always possible. Like, look at what we're doing to ourselves on the planet here. We wouldn't hesitate to go think about nuking another side of the planet without thinking that might have consequences on us. So who's to say that in somewhere in Mars's history there wasn't something similar that happened? And what's interesting is that if you talk to not just Duncan, but there's other people, and there's things that we came across, like J.J. Hertog's story of Mars, and there's things called, like, the Mars Chronicles, the Terra Papers. There's the remote viewing that they did in the 80s. You know, the CIA did remote viewing of ancient Mars. You'd have to ask yourself, why is the CIA doing remote viewing of ancient Mars, right? So the aspect of an ancient war and a massive destruction that took place on Mars is a reality. It just hasn't really been registered by a lot of people, and certainly the academic community isn't embracing it openly yet. But I do believe, you know, there's enough evidence now there for it to become simply a fact of history, and we can find that it's also happened on Earth. And so, you know, I think that essentially the aspect of the past is there. The aspect of the current civilization there is something, of course, that we explore, because the premise of Alternative 3, which is the kind of the book, the book leads as an inspiration to our taking up the path in the current time about whether there's, you know, truly could be an advanced civilization on the surface of Mars now. And all indications are that there has been technology that's been developed outside of the normal academic channels in the private sector by an elite group of people that are either through a combination of reverse engineering technology that's crash-landed on the surface of the Earth, or through absconding with technology developed by Earthlings. I mean, we have the work of Nikola Tesla. Essentially, that work led the door to technology which allows us to use magnetics in another way to warp time and create teleportation devices.
This is exactly what I've been going over the last few days, actually. I mean, you know, I feel too that it may have been some kind of nuclear war or weapon on Mars, and some things I've looked into is saying that possibly the nuclear weapon was the size of, like, the Empire State Building, that it was like a planet annihilating, you know, nuclear weapon. And you know, I think that too is that, you know, it's interesting, because I feel that this is just a remembrance of the past, and this has happened before. I think that technology has gotten to a certain point where it interweaved with almost our DNA and everything else, and it started to take over, almost like a quantum entanglement. And maybe it was the downfall of Atlantis and past civilizations that we have almost like a remembrance in our DNA about a once great past, you know, where we thrived like this before. And I feel like, you know, this is some kind of experimental planet. And if you look in the universe, it's like everything else is just a hellhole. And then you got Earth, everything, and it's just this beautiful experiment, and where everything is just like a library stored in this one planet, you know. it's like a living, breathing library. It really is.
All indications are that it's us that are the Martians. You know, 369 words of the English language are based on some Mars-related concept.
And isn't it true, Frank, that when we first went to Mars, I mean, not went to Mars, but somehow, like, when they go, our body is like, the chemistry of our body is more in tune with Mars than than Earth or something? Like, I heard, like, when they go in space, there's something that has to, our body is, like, something to do with Mars. I forget what it was. But it's, like, almost the chemistry of our body is adjust to Mars quicker than, I don't know what it was. I was reading something like that.
Interesting. I don't think I've come across that, but yeah, it would make sense to me, because it just seems there's too many parallels. And there's this kid called Beriska, you know?
That, yes, I know what you're talking about.
You've heard of him, right? Yeah, I mean, the guy, the kid at age three was already reading and reading headlines in newspapers, and his family was just amazed, and he was sent to school.
He's got to be older now, because I remember
seeing him. Yeah, I think he's 21 now.
He's like 10 or 13, and then,
He's like 20 now, 21 or something. But he's disappeared. I mean, I was thinking, you know, we were thinking, we got to, you know, because Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy were the only two people that ever went over and interviewed him and actually have something to show for it. And that was over 10 years ago.
When I first saw that, I mean, how can a little kid even talk about that stuff?
Right.
So someone's either pumping him with information before they recorded, or it's legit. I mean, what else can it be?
Because he's not being pumped. I mean, you can see it in the interview. He's shy. He doesn't even want to talk about it. He keeps diverting, and his mother's saying, look, it's safe. You can tell them. You can talk about the stuff. It's totally cool to talk about it. And he's obviously, you know, reluctant, but he does it. And he's an example of sort of this memory, this genetic memory that is there. And I think is also why we have this obsession with the planet Mars. I mean, it's just, even now, it's like it's increasing constantly, daily. There's this Mars obsession of some kind, and it's just uncanny, you know, that I never would have thought when I started in 2010. You got to realize we made this, it took us 5 years to make this film.
Imagine. Wow.
And it was simply because a lot of it was just
a good chunk of life, you know, like, wow.
Yeah. And you don't know, you know, it's like what you're going to end up with when you start and how long it's going to take. But when I started it originally, and then before I even met Tanya, and we continued on this sort of tandem path of uncovering and developing things, you know, I didn't know that the week we released our preview sneak peek release of Packing for Mars took place within a week of the release of The Martian. And within 1 week of my first, I was asked to come to Milano.
Talk about
Italy,
synchronicity.
And I was asked to come to Milan and do a presentation, ironically, in the Army headquarters of the United Nations there, about Packing for Mars. Before we even were finished with the film, I was showing and talking about slides and showing water and things and talking about some of the information we'd learned. And then a week later, the official announcement came from NASA that they had found water. So, you know, it's just continued since then. There's just more and more stuff. And now with all this information coming out with the forensic photography, it's clear that, you know, there's going to be some, it's not going to go away. There's going to be more and more stuff coming with Mars. You know, we had one of the people that we talked to after that came up to us and said they had their own whistleblowers telling them that they've been working on science projects since the 80s to transport large craft over to the surface of Mars for supplies, and that they'd been there since at least the 70s, if not even earlier. Some people even say that there's evidence we've been there since the 50s. But the thing is, what I was going to say is that essentially they were saying back then, these whistleblowers were saying that mankind is like the grasshoppers in summer that don't know that winter is coming. So somebody knows something, and Mars might have a very critical role in something that's in our very near future. And the reason why the secrecy is being, you know, is pervading, and that there's still this whole element of denial going on in the science of our planet about the surface of Mars and about what's there and the artifacts that are found.
Yeah, and you know, we only got like 5 minutes left too. And, you know, it's interesting, Frank, because, like, if you think about just Gaia or Earth just in general, everything on our physical plane, everything that we see, matter, is basically controlled. You know, if you think about just electricity, it's the control of the flow of electrons. Everything on energy on our Earth is about control, right? And I really feel that this is exactly, you know, what's going on with our media and everything. It's just about controlling our energy and what we're doing. And this whole thing about matter and antimatter and, you know, dark matter and light matter is really intense, because I really feel like places like CERN and, you know, places that are trying to control what we can't see is really what we need to look into more and try to, maybe you can even make a movie about this in the future, is that, you know, light, we are just matter that's light that's trapped, right? That's what makes us matter. But the antimatter is highly unstable, you know, and just to keep a gram of it, it's like you got to have this massive facility. And I really feel that, you know, CERN is working with this antimatter, this glue that's keeping everything on our planet together. And, you know, I had posted a YouTube video about a dream I had about how I was, like, sabotaging the Large Hadron Collider, and it transported me to this, like, I was in a cube prison on, like, Saturn, and I was about to get thrown into, like, a slave battle in this huge cloud of a hexagon. And I have just been doing research about, like, a hexagon on Mars and all that in my regular, like, physical life. And then I had a massive dream about that, and I posted it on YouTube, and within 2 hours, YouTube took it down and flagged it and said that it was explicit content because I'm talking about damaging the Large Hadron Collider and blah, 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 even though it was
really,
yeah. And all I was talking about was going, like, it was, I was on Saturn in, like, some, like, cube prison in my dream, and yeah. And I appealed it. I just haven't heard back from them yet. But,
well, you know, you're getting into whole other areas there that are, you know, that are just fascinating, this whole dark matter thing. I mean, it's just, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going on, and it's happening. It's just, you know, people don't just because they don't think it's happening or don't want to go there doesn't mean it's not going on.
Do you think that possibly, you know, Mars and Saturn and these other planets have some kind of, they're almost like these planets that are run by these antimatter, you know, because I think that this antimatter, there are beings that live in it and manipulate it, you know, because it's when matter is not contained, it could be changed and unstable and manipulate its form. It's when it's contained and it's trapped, it can be it's good, but when it's not contained, it's like it can be manipulated and it's can change forms and do whatever it can, you know. So possibly these planets are run by these antimatter beings, you know. They're like, it's something like that.
I would even localize it to just Mars and these. I think it's happening here on Earth as well.
Yeah.
I think it's essentially,
we're interacting with it all day long. It's in our room with us. Yeah.
we've been interacting with parallel dimensions or parallel universes and parallel Earths since at least the end, since the beginning of the 90s. You know, have you ever heard of the Chani Project?
Yeah, I have heard of it. Yes.
I mean, essentially, what they've done is they've tunneled through to other dimensions, and you know, they're like, it's now clear that it's not just a universe, but it's a multiverse, and it means that there are other versions of Earth. And these shows like Fringe,
yes,
and whatnot that sort of cover this material are kind of soft disclosing the reality that there actually is this other dimension. And what they've started to do by tunneling through to these other dimensions is actually bring back this antimatter. And exactly as you said, it's this really super potent stuff where just 1 gram of it needs to be contained in these massive like containment devices. So they've actually now brought enough of this stuff and stored it around the Earth that they've, and some people believe they've anchored this dark matter energy here on the planet, which actually might be, you know, some of the things that might explain like this Mandela effect that's taking place around us.
Yeah.
Where there's been a change in things. I mean, I just had another Mandela effect, you know, last week. I was like, somebody said, you know, Pete Townshend, the guitar player from The Who, his name is spelled T-O-W, S-E-N-D is how I spell it, but now it's spelled T-O-W-S-H-E-N-D. And I'm like, no way. God. No, it is not spelled Tao-Shen.
Yeah,
it's
Tao-Sen. Not.
But you can go to Wikipedia and you go anywhere and you just see Pete Townshend. You know, for me, it was like, okay, it's real. It's happening. There is a bleed through. Something is going on. And it's not just going on other planets. It's happening right here and probably happening on all the planets simultaneously.
Well said, Frank. We got to cut it because the next show is coming back on, but we got to have you back on. Stay on the line. We'll book you again. Everybody, this is Frank Jacob, Packing for Mars, movie.com. And I'm at themysticalspiral.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks in the chat room. We'll see you next week. And once again, I say, spiral out.
Reflecting inside your